This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You're watching the Action Sports Jax 24/7 Network. Now, it's time for the Brent and Austin Show.
Hey, welcome in, everybody, to Best Bet Monument Road here in Jacksonville. We are at the table. I mean, this is the final table right here, just to let you know.
The final table.
This is how this stuff works. This is a good setup. I didn't anticipate being right here. Mm-hmm. I'm like, hey, we got lights. I didn't even have to set up the lights today, Austin. And now we just need a dealer, man.
No, for sure, man. I mean, I've actually been at this table before, at the main table when I played in a poker tournament for a charity. I made like the final 10, so I think I got third place in that one. But yeah, the cool thing about this table too is that these squares right here, they have sensors in terms of what the cards can
underneath
say.
The
yeah
camera.
so I made a mistake because it was streaming and the cards I didn't have on the square, so they couldn't know like what exactly was going on in terms of, by the way, I can't hear anything right now. Yeah. Sorry, I got people in my ear. But overall, though, man, yeah, it's a really cool table we're at right now. Sorry. Yeah.
Come on, we're going to really test you out to see if you could
I failed
the entire
already,
show.
I'm out.
That's all right. You're good. Nick in the daytime is with us. Back-to-back days. We won't be talking about Kendrick Lamar and Garth Brooks, most likely, with him.
But,
good to have him back in the studio and on the show. And Brent Martineau, Austin Lane, live at Best Bet Jacksonville. Big weekend, Memorial Day. We'll tell you about some of the things that are happening here. And, hey, easy to find out all the things that are happening at Best Bet Jax, right? BestBetJax.com. Just an easy way to go. This is very good signage, by the way, set up. This is called product placement in the business. Hey, a lot of NFL talk. We'll have Jonathan Papelbon scheduled to join us today on the show. Former Red Sox and Phillies closer, and of course, from Bishop Kenny High School, went to Mississippi State. He's going to get inducted into the Red Sox Hall of Fame next week, and it'll be good to catch up with Jonathan Papelbon. We hope to have that. Jacksonville Armada in action tomorrow. The women's team makes their debut on our Action Sports Jacks 24/7 network stream. So we'll have Coach on in the 11 o'clock hour as well. So a lot to get to there. A couple of leftover things, actually, that almost forgot to get to this week and want to make sure we don't. I have a habit of doing that. Did you see the first down marker stuff this week?
I have,
Finally, we're going electronic. I don't really know what prompted that at this time, but I find it interesting that it's not even much of an experimental play. I mean, it's a little bit. It's going to be in the preseason, but they might say, hey, if this thing works out well in the preseason, we're good to go. Maybe they're just finalizing technology, kind of like Major League Baseball is trying to do with the strike zone, right, and the robotic ump deal, and they're not ready to do that. They don't like the system completely, so I guess they're trying to work out some of the bugs in it.
Yeah, I mean, I totally understand it because it is kind of a long, drawn-out process to get the chain gang out there and to see if you get a first down, but I kind of enjoy it in terms of, you know, I kind of like just like the wait-and-see kind of aspect of it. You know, like you're kind of on pins and needles waiting for this marker to reveal if your team has a first down or not. Like, I think there adds a little drama when you do that. So, I mean, I'm not sure how much I'm going to miss it, but, like, I honestly didn't have a problem with it. Now, if your team gets screwed over because the spot of the ball is messed up, then, yeah, obviously you have some room to complain and gripe, but I almost like the drama a little bit of waiting for the chain game to go out there
That's
and see if you got a first down.
That's interesting that you do, because, I mean, everybody's talked about, like, a sensor or the digital technology, everything mm-hmm. else to be able to just get it right, boom, probably do it quicker. It does seem so archaic. First down marker. It's got to be one of the most archaic things we do in sports.
Mm-hmm.
And but you're going to miss it a little bit.
No, I'm definitely going to miss it, man. Absolutely.
Will it work? Will it be a quick adaptation?
Of course. Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's going to like. I mean, you have so many views now with camera angles and things like that. You have the pylon camera, so I assume, I mean, they're going to get this thing down to an exact science where no one's going to feel slighted. So I think it'll work right away. I think it'll take off in preseason, and I'm sure the NFL is going to implement that then later on in the regular season.
You know, earlier this week, we were talking about the Jaguars We talk about Jaguars a lot, but we're talking about how they get off the bus and look good, how it looks like they're a better-looking football team, whatever that means. Mm-hmm. We have no idea, but we had OTAs, and we were showing you some OTA stuff, and you can check it out earlier this week. We're only allowed into one of them. They finished their first week of OTAs, by the way, yesterday, in terms of being on the field. But then I had somebody jump in on, I was listening to the show, and they used that RAS system, or RAS system, where basically everybody gets graded now. They can go back and take all the measurables and the speed, the power, and tell you what kind of athlete everybody is.
Okay.
And what I didn't know is that they rank the teams basically on that same metric.
Mm.
And what it showed, and we'll hopefully pull it up in a minute, but basically the education here was that the Jags are more physically gifted than they've been in quite some time. This is from Math Bomb, by the way, who does this, so we're going to take him at his word.
Hate the name already.
But it says the Jags are fourth on the list, including in terms of this average RAS score, 7.8. And look what the description says, because I think this is what's important.
Mm.
Jags are another team that has changed gears in only the last few years. 20-22 to 20-24 rating the highest for all of their rosters since 2010.
Hmm.
It's a huge shift for them as their roster averaged only 6.69 in 2020, which, again, goes in the same timeline as Trent Baalke has come here, and even Urban Meyer at that part, which you would think he likes that bigger, stronger, faster athlete from the college days, too. He knows that would win.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought there was some significance in that. Now, take it as you will. I mean, it doesn't make you a great player. It doesn't prove that you're going to be this or that. There's a lot of comparisons to other players in this scoring system, which is kind of interesting. And by the way, athletes today are bigger, faster, stronger than ever before. So I think there's already a little bit of a domino effect that's going to make your score look a little bit better.
Yes.
But I thought this was pretty significant based on what my eyes tell me, what the Jaguars have done, what we know Trent Baalke likes in some of the measurables, that the Jaguars actually, from a metric standpoint, add up to be a little bit more better looking.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, obviously, size, I've echoed this before, you can't teach size. Either you have that or you don't. And you have to win the trenches, and this was addressed in the offseason. I'm surprised. Do you know who the number one ranking team in the RAS score was?
You know, I got to find, let me.
I mean, I know it.
Oh, you do know?
Yes.
Okay. I would say, I'm going to guess. I don't know. I was, the rankings were all over the place when I just kind of went down a little bit of a rabbit hole.
Yes.
But the Giants, I think, were highly rated in this. Just to give
the Giants
example.
Are fifth.
It doesn't make you like the Super Bowl winner.
The Saints are sixth.
I would say, I'm going to say Baltimore.
No.
What a team that I was surprised by one team, and I'll tell you that team in a minute. So I know that they're not the top one.
Okay.
Let's go with, like, Seattle.
So, Indianapolis has the highest RAS score. Baltimore was 19th.
Interesting.
Which is, crazy, because I think we all think of Baltimore as, like, this physical, you know, big team. And, they finished 19th. So, the Colts actually had the highest, which I thought was, you know, I mean, like, once again, like, I guess what you're taking into account, size, strength, weight, and athleticism, or what is...
Yeah, I mean, the RAS, let me just pull one up for you. I mean, it will tell you all the different metrics of what it does, but I'll even go a little deeper on that.
Yeah.
The AFC South alone is not great. The AFC South is, the Jaguars were 4, Indianapolis 1, I guess half the division's great. And the Texans are 26.
Yeah, and the Titans 27.
Are 27. Wow. Interesting. Seattle 28, Buffalo 29, Cincinnati 30, Vegas 31, and the Rams 32. So that's the back end of it. But teams like, I'll give you one that surprised me, because I feel like they're big and strong and athletic. San Francisco.
Yeah.
They're like number 23 on this list.
Yeah.
So, I mean, again, I'm not telling you it means everything. I don't buy into it. I see these all the time around draft time.
Sure.
And I'm like, okay, that doesn't. What does it mean, you know?
Yeah.
But here's what it takes into place. Hand size, arm length, Trent Baalke specials here.
Yes.
Composite size grade, height, weight, and then the bench. Composite speed grade, 40-yard dash, 20-yard split, 10-yard split. Composite explosion grade, vertical and broad. Composite agility grade, shuttle and three cone.
Gotcha.
So, again, height, weight, bench, 40, 20, 10, vertical jump, broad jump, shuttle, three cone. These are all things that we talk about in the draft process when we're shocking or mocking.
Yeah, I mean, right? Basically what you're saying is you're taking you're taking the combine testing and whoever had the best scores there athletically, and then you take into account the size as well, is where you're at.
Yeah, and now the next part of this is how does it transition to playing football, right?
Correct.
So I don't know the significance of it. I didn't sit here and tell you on Monday that the Jags are going to the Super Bowl because they look better getting off the bus. Yeah. I just think it's notable that all the things that people actually talk about, arm length, size, the Hunt story that we were talking about with Trent saying, hey, you know where I want to go? It's either go big or go home, right? I mean, bigger or smaller guy. I'm taking the bigger guy. There's not enough of them. Like, all those things, I will give them credit for this. They are practicing what they're preaching, right? I mean, they are going to identify those players. Those are the kind of players they bring in. Now, who else makes up the player that they're trying to bring in? Obviously, athletic, physically gifted. The other part of this is good locker room guy and character. They're definitely trying to check that box. Like, that has been a noted effort to do that. I'm waiting for them to take a little bit of a risk on a guy. I don't even feel like they are. I thought they would. What else do you think they're looking at right now that makeup of this locker room?
Yeah. I mean, it has all to do with the leadership, obviously, and doing things the right way. You know, like, I mean, I don't know, like, all these guys' personalities in terms of, are they loud vocal leaders? Are they more of just the strong silent type? And, you know, we've been over this before. I mean, it takes all types to be successful in NFL locker rooms. So I just think that they're taking guys that aren't going to be a liability, that aren't going to sway from the path, if you will. Now, if one of those guys presents itself, you know, whether it's in a via trade or maybe next year, like, teams will always take a risk if the talent justifies, you know, the distractions. I just think, like, with Brian Thomas Jr., guy could be super talented, didn't have a lot of off the field issues, so you don't have to worry about him. So I just think of where everybody fell to the Jaguars, it worked out well, and you don't have any red flags, at least I feel like. I mean, not maybe production, you could say it could be a red flag for, like, a guy like Mason Smith, but I don't think that's necessarily tied to his personality or his attitude. I mean, injuries, you know, play a part in that as well.
That's actually a very good point you just said. I'm kind of listing them, right? And I say physical traits right there. We just said it. High character guys. I think you check the box pretty much across the board. I'm not telling you that nobody ever had a speeding ticket, but I don't think we see a lot of guys that are like, should they bring that guy into the locker room? You wonder, should they, could they? I think they even didn't get some of those pass rushers that were veteran guys last year because they were a little bit afraid of the mix of how it would fit in. And I don't know which ones, by the way. Take Leonard Floyd or somebody else like that. Those are, like, I'm not saying that that guy wouldn't fit in. I'm just saying, why didn't they go after them? It might have been a little bit because of that. You're bringing a guy in that maybe they don't think meshes very well. So I think the character matters. I think you just said it, good leadership, specifically in this free agent class, right? Because of Armstead and Darby and experienced leadership, I would say.
Yeah, of course.
Fits the bill. What I don't know, and I wonder, is this a smart team? The one thing that I think always missed about 2017, and you can say those guys had attitudes and swagger, and one thing that doesn't always align with that is high IQ. Jalen Ramsey, Tayshaun Gibson, Barry Church, I think even Telvin Smith. Good football IQ guys, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and maybe this didn't happen so much in Jacksonville, but you saw us with the Rams and also the Dolphins a little bit, is like, I mean, in terms of IQ and Jalen Ramsey, yeah, I think he's an intelligent person, but he also takes some risks sometimes and gets burned deep.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think he knows the game.
Oh, yeah, no, I mean, without...
Not everybody knows the game.
Yeah, not everybody knows the game, but, like, if you make it to the National Football League, like, you should be able to get on a board, and again, not everybody can do this, but, like, 8 times out of 10 of these players, like, can get on the board and break down a defense or an offense. I mean, you just, you're around the game so much, how can you not? And I also think that comes down to coaches and really getting their point across and saying, hey, this is what we're doing, can you do this, yes or no? So, like, I get where you're going with the whole IQ thing. But, like, I don't think there's really any dumb football players out there. Like, I think there's some guys that want to master their craft and spend the extra due diligence in doing so. But, like, I feel like a lot of guys understand the game of football.
Yeah, I think I think there's levels of it. Okay. I'm not telling you they're dumb. I don't I don't want to label anybody that. I just think some people are more instinctive, reactive in all sports, and that helps them elevate. I mean, you take a guy like Paul Posluszny, I think he's super high IQ. I think Foye Aluakin, smart player, right? Going to do a lot of the right things, disciplined area. I think you have other players that are going to, in high spots or key spots, get penalties that they shouldn't get because they ain't thinking right. That's not high IQ to me. You know?
Sure, yeah, but then, okay, then give me the highest IQ defensive lineman.
I mean, I don't know this, but I would say, I think like a Josh Allen is a high IQ player.
Okay.
Knows the game, has learned a lot about the game over the years.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know enough about like Trayvon Walker, how well he knows football in that sense. I'm not sure yet. I'm not saying he's not, but
no. Yeah. I mean, I think the whole IQ thing too comes down to positions more than anything. Like you can say TJ Watt has a high IQ just because, well, you know, sometimes he'll play outside of himself and maybe he'll go in inside a different gap and make a play. I mean, is that high IQ? You could count it as that, but like I think of like Luke Kuechly is a prime example, and Puz, like you mentioned, is a great example as well, where Luke Kuechly, you know, made his whole game around being in the right spot at the right time. I mean, he had athleticism and instincts as well, but like the IQ, you could see in spades. So I think IQ is important, but also I think it really depends on the position. Where like if you're a safety center fielder, you're calling off coverages, you're calling off man, or you're going zone. I mean, you have to be able to understand there. We always praise Foye Aluakin because this guy does do that. You know, he does get guys set up properly, and he does make sure guys are in the right spots. That's a high IQ. But I don't think it's the end-all, be-all in all defenses, because defensive line, it's a lot more of just, hey, you read and react.
Go, yeah, I get you. And, and like, there's probably a fine line here, and I really try to be careful. I'm not trying to call anybody dumb. Or I think there's just a different level of instinctual sports play. And people, sometimes that shows, sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it doesn't need to show because you're so athletic. It's just like see ball, get ball type thing, right?
Correct.
I mean,
that
happened. By the way, there's a beauty about those kind of guys. But when we're talking to last year about players like from Calvin Ridley to even Parker Washington, are those guys low IQ players? Are they running the wrong routes? Are they because it's new to the system? Parker Washington because he's a younger guy? Like, I don't know the reason why.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering, okay, I don't see Christian Kirk doing that. Is that because he's a veteran guy or is he a high IQ player, right? And really understands the game, the nuances of the game, and where to be and sit down in spots and everything else. Like, you know, you mentioned a lot of different players. Like, Travis Kelce is a beautiful example of this, right? I mean, that's really, he's so good at finding a spot even off script to make a play that makes him so dangerous. Some of that's relationship-based with Mahomes.
Oh, that's so, it's got a lot to do with it.
But I just think, I don't know where the Jags are. I don't even know how we would know. I think that's really an internal thing what the Jags should know, would know about how much football knowledge these guys have, especially when you get to this level.
No, for sure. I mean, you know, having, and I'm sure Travis Kelce has grown a lot since I shared a locker room with him. But like, I wonder, like, if you go to Travis Kelce, if you go to Gronk, two guys who are the masters of finding that open space in zone coverage, if you go to them, you go on a board and say, hey, draw up a cover two defense, draw up a cover three defense. I wonder if they can actually do that. I would wonder if they know exactly what to look for, or if it's just like they have such a rapport with their quarterback, they have such a feel for the game where it's like, yeah, this is an open spot, I'm going to stand right here. Like, overall, I'm not sure, like, football savvy, how great they are. Maybe they're, you know, the Einsteins of breaking down coverages. But you don't have to be. All you have to be is a guy who knows how to find that open target, that open hole. And Gronk and Travis Kelce are two classic examples of that.
Yeah. It's good stuff. We're live from Best Bet Jacksonville here at Monument Road. We are at the final table. This is a great room where we are at. Doors are open on Memorial Day weekend here. As you can get your weekend rolling, if you're in the area, stop on by, grab some lunch, of course, and say hello to us as well. And we are here until 1 o'clock with the show. We've got a fun show lined up, more football stuff, including situational football, not really the IQ portion of it, but where guys end up. There's an interesting article about where quarterbacks have been positioned nicely to succeed and where they haven't, and I didn't see Jags names on there, at least when I looked at it quickly, but I wonder when it comes to Jags quarterbacks over the last decade or so, where they've tried to take some swings, where do they fit in the mix of that versus maybe the rest of the NFL? Let's take a timeout here on the show. We come back, we'll talk a little bit more about that and much more to get to here on a Friday. Hope you're doing well. We roll into these Fridays quick and a Memorial Day weekend here in Jacksonville. And don't forget, tomorrow we've got the Jacksonville Armada on the Action Sports Jax 24/7 network. Game at 5 o'clock. Coverage starts at 4:30. You can find it on ActionNewsJax.com, the Action News Jax app, the brand new Action Sports Jax 24/7 network. Will have soccer, and the women's team makes their debut at home at Jacksonville University. We'll replay that several times on Sunday as well if you miss it on Saturday. The Jacksonville Armada on the Action Sports Jax 24/7 network.
Welcome back to the Brent and Austin Show, streaming on the Action Sports Jax 24/7 network.
Hey, welcome back to Best Bet Jacksonville, and get the Stars and Stripes No Limit tournament. $100,000 guarantee coming up today through Monday. So a busy weekend here at Best Bet Jacksonville on Monument Road. Good to be here. We're always down at St. Augustine location and stopped up a little closer to home this time around as we get ready for a busy weekend here at Best Bet Jacksonville and all the locations, Orange Park and St. Augustine as well. Brent Martineau along with Austin Lane as we get ready for the weekend. You got any holiday plans? You go boating? Like, people think Memorial Day weekend. I think one thing, school's out up north, or at least, well, no, summer starts. School's not out up north. We went all the way through like the third week of June. School's out down here.
Yeah.
But summer begins. Well, summer started like a month ago around here.
Feels like
so, like,
it, yes.
What do people think about here? Just go out on a boat? You have a cookout?
Yeah, you can go on a boat. I mean, we got a jazz festival going on this weekend at the beach.
So that's right.
I'll probably check that out. I think Robin Thicke is one of the headliners. So go see what he's all about, man. But yeah, just going to be a whole lot of chilling. Hopefully it's not going to be too toasty out there. But we live by the beach, so even if it is, probably go in the water a little bit.
Why did Jason Hamby in our group text want me to talk about Nickelback today?
I have no idea. Yeah, I saw that. I was working out when he said that. Wasn't even going to dignify myself to come up with a response to Nickelback, to tell you the truth. So I have no idea what he alluded to by that.
I feel like I've been doing like sports talk shows for like over a decade now, and I feel like when I started, Nickelback was a point of contention with people.
Yeah,
and we're still talking about Nickelback. Or it's just Jason Hamby talking about it?
I think just Jason. I mean, are they trending? I have no idea why.
Yeah, I don't know. I have no idea.
Yeah,
I responded, who?
Sure.
And he said, yikes. The band. He actually answered me.
Yeah. Which you knew he was talking about, right?
I knew he was
talking about. But yeah, once again,
I figured I'd play dumb on
him. Yeah, I like that, man. I respect that. Yeah, I'm not sure why Nickelback is in Hamby's mind right now, living rent-free, it seems like. I don't know if they did something, if they... they getting canceled? Was Nickelback getting canceled? Did we see something?
Maybe. Nick, I mean, does your music extend to Nickelback as well? From Garth Brooks to Kendrick Lamar.
To Nickelback and past Nickelback.
Yep.
So Nickelback fits like a new middle era, early 2000s.
Yeah, I bet. So Nickelback is like they're the meme band that they're the easiest to make fun of.
No, I know it.
Oh,
I know
okay.
It.
Well, that's what he was getting at.
Yeah, I know. What, but like, is there something new with them, Nick?
I don't think so.
Why would he? Like, why did Hamby bring this up? Was Hamby trying to be funny, and he wasn't really that funny?
Might have been.
We just miss something?
It beats me why he would bring it up.
Yeah, I don't either. I don't know.
But anyways, I mean, if you want to like a comparable band who's actually making a resurgence and people are starting to like them again, it's Creed.
Oh yeah, it's been very popular, right?
Creed is kind of hitting their resurgence, if you will.
Were they want to make fun of band though? Were they? Were they kind of like a meme band? They were.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Come on, Brent. Yes. Creed was like in Nickelback status almost, and all of a sudden, Creed became kind of a cool thing again.
Yeah. Huh. I didn't remember that.
Not really the cool thing.
Did Nickelback do the halftime a few years back?
I think Nickelback did not like
no.
Super
I was thinking.
Bowl.
I was thinking Maroon
they,
5.
They did.
I was thinking Maroon 5.
Yeah, I mean that's another rough one. No, I think Nickelback did in Detroit. I want to say this is like maybe a decade ago. Did the halftime show for Thanksgiving? People felt a certain type of way about it because, you know, they're from Canada and everything. So I think that's might have, there you go, 2011.
So why were they the meme band? Like, where did that all originate?
Just their music not being best.
There are a lot of bands that musics aren't great.
Yeah, Brent, but you ever really listen to a bunch of Nickelback stuff, man? Garth Brooks. Nick in the daytime, man, brings it. I like it.
Nick's getting a little...
I mean, is it safe to, like, listen?
Nick's getting a little aggressive on the show.
Listen,
and courageous here on the show.
I'm just saying, like, with Nickelback, it's very basic. It's very elementary stuff. And then, you know, they have a habit to, like, repeat their lyrics over, like, hey, I want to be a rock star.
Yeah.
I mean, do we call Garth Brooks the Nickelback of country music? Because?
No.
I mean, we talk standing outside the fire. How many times do you get to repeat it? We get it. You're standing outside fire. Got it, Garth. Appreciate you.
We're going to have to go find songs now that just repeat themselves. I mean, we make pretend like these guys are like the ultimate poets all the time.
Oh, Brett, kidding, man. I think it's so personally.
What? Music often can be like soccer, in my opinion. I always say this about soccer. I feel like soccer's emergence.
Where are you going with this?
Because soccer's emergence at times, especially when you have like a World Cup.
Okay.
And everybody gets rallied around it.
Sure.
The people that loved soccer prior to don't like all the time the fact that everybody else is.
Yeah.
There are some. Not
bunch
all,
of posers,
but,
right?
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. They don't love that. They're like, hey, we know soccer, you don't.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
And I think music has a little bit of that kind of snobby feel to it. Like, when you like what you like, it's like there's a boundary around it.
Yeah, yeah. Right? And there's people always have, like, they're more, like, obscure, like, off-the-beaten-path kind of bands. And then when that band
especially
becomes,
you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, a lot of people do, though. But then, like, when that band becomes big, then those people want to be like, oh, well, where are you from the beginning?
Yeah,
you know, like,
yeah.
I've been rolling this band, you know, since day one and things like that. But also... And once again, like I don't fall on the side of hater here, but you kind of celebrate the fact of, hey, the band that you kind of like grew up on that you liked now became a big thing. Like, you know, they're successful. Like, I think you like to see that as well.
Yeah. What is one like that for you? Do you have one?
What is one band like that for me? That's a good question.
Like, I think I saw somebody early. I'm trying to think of who I saw early when I was in college. We went down with, like, the radio station. I think it was that got pretty big for a little bit. Mm-hmm. That you can justify this or not, but Third Eye Blind.
Mm-hmm.
Was like playing on like one of those just a dive bar performance at the time, but got a lot bigger.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
But there are stories like that. Now, I'm not telling you that I like love them.
Yeah.
I'm just saying I saw them early.
I would say a guy, and you have no idea who I'm talking about, but it's all good. Guy by the name of Tyler, the Creator. I got in like on his very first album, and I was a huge fan of it. And I'm not going to repeat the album title, but I got in on the first album, and... Like, nobody really knew about it yet, you know, the Odd Future Wolfgang thing. And then eventually he became, like, a Grammy-winning, you know, creator. Because, I mean, you can call him a rapper, but he's so much more than that. He does all kinds of genres now. And he became, like, a really big thing. And ironically, when he became, like, super big, I wasn't, like, I mean, I still, like the music. I listen to all the albums. But, like, I liked him a lot better when it was almost like he was, like, this kid that had something to prove.
Yeah, underground more, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Nick, I think Stapleton's a little bit like this. Like, Stapleton had really good stuff, and in Nashville and amongst, like, the country music world, like, I had never really heard of him. But remember the award show, like, he... No.
He was a part of the Steel Drivers 2008-2010.
Okay.
So it goes way back. It's more bluegrass. It gets a little bit farther away from country, but that's where he really kind of started. Then he left
and
became more of a writer and then an independent artist.
Yeah, he had a ton of respect in the music industry, obviously, from all the writing. But I remember it was an award show like 6-7 years ago where he won like everything.
Yeah.
And people were like, this is the greatest thing ever. He deserves it, you know? and he kind of blew on the scene that way. That's your music. I thought I had one more thing. Oh, I got one more thing on music.
Let's go.
I hate talking music.
Well, man.
But here I go.
Yeah.
Is you guys can fill me in here. I see Post Malone doing a bunch of country stuff.
Correct.
Is this a new? Is that what he's doing right now? Like, is he getting into that genre? Is he just crossing over? Like, what's all the collaboration with the country stuff? Is that out of the blue?
No, I mean, I think he's been doing that for a while. It's just the big thing now, man. Like, everyone's, I mean, Beyonce, you know, crossed over and everything. It's just country now has become more accessible, I think, to the modern masses because you've taken the elements of, you know, acoustic guitars and fiddles and all this stuff, and now you've essentially made it more produced. And I think when you produce it like that, a lot of people are more going to come. Because, you know, like, back in the day with country music, man, it was like, if you're into Montgomery Gentry, if you're into Brooks and Dunn, like, more than likely, you're probably in the country.
Yeah.
You know, or, like, you're in the burbs. But now, like, you got Beyonce, you got Post Malone, you have all these guys crossing over. And to me, what really, like, was the crossover game changer for me was when it was Nelly and Tim McGraw, which I never would have thought would have been a thing, but it was, and it worked, and I liked it. And yeah, so I just think that, you know, it's more avenues to get people listening to your music.
Yeah, and obviously it's a popular genre, so you're reaching out to a demographic that exists, right? That's a big pool.
Yeah, and I feel like Post Malone looks like the typical country singer, like face tattoos and all this stuff. Now, hopefully Casey's not listening because he's going to cry about Jelly Roll, but like, it's the truth.
So you're hating on Jelly Man? Come on.
I just don't know who Jelly Roll is, man.
Yeah,
he's got a good story.
Oh my god! Yeah, I've heard this story 25 times.
He's not into the story.
And I get people want to bring signs to concerts, and grown men are crying because of Jelly Roll's story, and that's fantastic. I'm all set with the story, Nick. You know, like, cool. Yeah, got it, man. How's the music sounding? How's the music sounding?
The music's not bad though. The music's good.
Newer
songs are all right.
Yeah, okay.
It's a good storyteller.
Yeah.
What we like.
Doing drugs and stuff, and then all of a sudden you change your life. I get it, man. It's good stuff. I'm all set.
Good success story. I like it. Yeah. Hey, speaking of success or not, an interesting article out that got me thinking a lot of different ways. We say this all the time. You know, when you enter the NFL, any player, but specifically the quarterback, it's a situational deal. Like, what situation are you walking into? And if you've listened to me, you've heard me say it a million times, so I won't pound it home much. But the Tom Brady situation and the Russell Wilson situation, I think Russell Wilson to me is the poster child for this. Because if the Jags, Pat, didn't pick punter and Brian Anger and they picked Russell Wilson, I don't think Russell Wilson has near the career that he had in Seattle and beyond. Sure. I just don't think they were set up for success for that young man who needed to get successful early with good coach, good program, good defense, good running. He had a lot of things around him to then grow into what he grew into, which was an MVP Russell Wilson in Seattle. Mm-hmm. And he had time to do that. They didn't ask him to do it right away. Now, we have other guys like Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes, year two, win MVPs and are ready to just go. And some of that's stylistic, some of that's skill set, some of that's just, hey, we're really good. I get it. But not everybody's like that. This goes back to the old conversation of, hey, should we sit a guy, or is it better to let him grow, like all those things. Well, we have recent history that tells us Mac Jones, was he in a good situation? Well, it looked like year one, not really the year two and three. Justin Fields, was he in a good situation? Not really. Year one and two, not so good, especially. He had nothing around him. Asked him to do too much. So this article says guys that were in the best situations for number one overall picks.
Okay.
And here's a couple of names. Jameis Winston back in 2015.
With the Tampa Buccaneers.
With the Bucs.
Yep.
Said he, with Mike Evans. They had drafted a left tackle, Donovan Smith, in round two. Winston ultimately threw 22 touchdowns, totaled 4,000 passing yards as a rookie.
Okay.
Eli Manning, Amani Toomer, Ike Hilliard, Jeremy Shockey, Tiki Barber.
Okay.
So, surrounded with some pretty good stuff. Now, he'd play in 9 games his rookie year, completed under 50% of his passes, by the way, in his rookie year. Joe Burrow's on this list with A.J. Green, T. Higgins, Tyler Boyd, before they went and got Jamar Chase, of course.
Yeah.
Joe Mixon, so in a pretty good spot to be able to succeed. Now, I think you could argue he had no offensive line.
No, he didn't. But, yeah, I mean, he went to the Super Bowl.
And weapons were pretty good, right? Matthew Stafford, it's an interesting line they say in this article. Calvin Johnson, the greatest number one receiver ever handed to a quarterback selected first overall.
Yeah. hands down.
Yeah, pretty good, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So Stafford, by the way, played in 10 games, threw 20 interceptions, most of any season in his career to date.
Yeah.
In just a 10-game sample in that rookie year. And now they put number one as Caleb Williams. That's how this article obviously came to fruition. But Caleb is in a great spot, and a lesson learned from Justin Fields being in a bad spot.
Of course. I mean, listen, I've said this so many times. The number one receiver is everything with a young quarterback. Kyler Murray, they ended up getting DeAndre Hopkins for Kyler Murray. That worked out pretty
well. Yes, yes.
Who did Daniel Jones have?
Saquon?
As the number one receiver?
Oh, you're just talking
receiver. Oh, yeah, I'm talking about number one receiver.
Nobody.
Yeah.
Does he still have anybody?
they got Malik Nabers now.
Now they have
you get the sense that Nabers doesn't even really want to be there. But they have Nabers now. But I think there is something to be said when you bring in that true number one go-to target for your quarterback to give him confidence. And obviously with Caleb Williams, they've done that and then some. Justin Fields, when he came out, like, yeah, eventually they got DJ Moore. But before DJ Moore, who did Justin Fields have?
Nothing.
Mooney, I guess.
Allen Robinson. Was he with him? I think in his first year.
Allen Robinson,
with him.
Maybe.
But yeah, coming off that, okay,
Chase Claypool.
Yeah.
Maybe.
They went and got those kind of guys.
Yeah.
It was a little bit like Bryce Young last year. It's like you had some guys that you knew their names had done some things, but mm-hmm. you're probably asking those guys to do too much. Thielen at his age actually delivered with 100 catches, but DJ Chark and those kind of players.
Mm-hmm.
Who's the tight end from Jacksonville? Hayden Hurst.
Hayden Hurst.
It's like, okay, that looks pretty good. I actually fell victim to that. I was like, hey, that's not bad. You're kind of band-aiding up a little bit, so you're not awful.
Mm-hmm.
But it really wasn't great either, based on today's receiving course. All right, best situations for top 12 picks. They say Jay Cutler with the Broncos, by the way, is the number 11 pick. When he had
Brandon Marshall.
Rod Smith. Mike Anderson running the football. Cutler would throw 9 touchdown passes over 5 games in his first season. Phillip Rivers, which is ironic here because both Phillip and Eli Manning make this list in good situations. Keenan McCardell was the guy at 34 years old. LaDainian Tomlinson, of course, a nice guy to have in the backfield with you. Mahomes, they said, was set up very nicely.
Okay.
Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill, Chris Conley. Albert Wilson, DeMarcus Robinson were the other guys. Running back Spencer Ware had 1,300 yards from scrimmage. And they had Shakondrick West and Kareem Hunt also. So, but what I would say is that was a lot of unproven stuff for the most part that emerged kind of as the time that Randy Reed and Patrick Mahomes were cooking.
Well, yeah, without a doubt. Like, I mean, with Tyreek Hill, it's almost like Patrick Mahomes and him grew together.
Yeah. I would say so. No, I mean, Fields is actually on this list of guys that were good spots.
Who do they have?
Robinson, Mooney, Bird, okay. Marquise Goodwin, Jimmy Graham. He's 35 years old. Jimmy Graham hadn't done anything in like a couple of years.
Yeah.
David Montgomery, who was a good, nice player, right?
Yeah.
They put J.J. McCarthy, by the way, on this list. They say Matt Leinart because of Larry Fitzgerald primarily.
Sure,
that makes sense. And then they say go all the way back to 1999 and say Dante Culpepper.
Oh, yeah, you had Randy and Chris Carter.
Randy Moss, Chris Carter, Jake Reed, and Robert Smith toting the rock.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good setup for Culpepper, man. That's a really good one. Like, mm-hmm. that's one that you could say is kind of like Caleb Williams.
Yeah, I mean... Yeah,
that's about as good as it gets. And, mm-hmm. and again, he wasn't a number one overall pick. Culpepper wasn't, but he was a top 12 pick is what they are saying in this. All right, here's the worst ones. David Klingler. Carl Pickens, by the way, one of his receivers there. That didn't work out. Ryan Leaf. Kerry Collins. Drew Bledsoe with the Patriots, who actually survived it and did pretty well. And David Carr with the Texans, who was sacked like a million times. But let's see if we even recognize anybody's name. Number one receiver was Corey Bradford. Jabbar Gaffney, by the way.
Okay.
Juwan Dawson. Jermaine Lewis. And Billy Miller. That was a tight end.
Okay.
Running back was Jonathan Wells. And James Allen. So Carr would throw 9 touchdowns, 15 picks in his rookie season. But I think what they don't put in here is he was sacked like a gazillion times when he was in Houston. So those are good examples. The only guy that survived it, I mean, Kerry Collins, I think, did okay eventually.
Yeah, he had some longevity.
With the Giants, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. But Bledsoe is the guy that was in a bad situation that survived.
Yeah.
Not too many guys seem to do that. So I bring that with that context back to Jacksonville. You think of guys that were drafted. Again, Brunell a little bit different in this spot, but you got the Leftwiches and the Garrards. You have, really, you go to Blaine Gabbert. More recently, we got Gabbert, Bortles, and now Trevor.
Okay.
Right? And I've always said this about Gabbert. I have no idea if he would have been a good player. Mm-hmm. But he was in a horrendous situation.
Well, yeah. I mean, he had Blackmon, but we know how that turned out. Like, they tried to build around Gabbert, but what they built just didn't sustain, unfortunately.
Yeah, they had really, at that time, you guys, I should say, had very little offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
And very little run game on the weapons, but you had a good run game.
Yes.
Lean on the run game. I also think situationally what you had there is you had the whole shock to the system of, hey, David Garrard, you're done, and hey, Gabbert, get ready. And that was not the plan. So, I mean, you add that into the mix, and it's like just a recipe for disaster.
It is, but it really begs the question if Justin Blackmon would have panned out and if he would have, you know, been able to stay on the field, what direct correlation that would have had on Blaine Gabbert.
Yeah, because now you got, like, Justin Blackmon and Mojo, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
I mean, I'm not trying to make up excuses because, once again, we've seen Zach Wilson have one of the best wide receivers, it seems like, in the league, and Zach Wilson could never produce. But I just do wonder, looking back on it now, what it would have looked like if Blackmon would have, you know, had 5-10 years underneath his belt.
Let me ask you this. If Blaine Gabbert, I always wonder this, if Blaine Gabbert had ended up somewhere else, would he have had a more productive career?
I think so, because I think a lot of Blaine Gabbert's downfall just came from being thrust in a situation when he wasn't expecting to be thrust in the situation. You know, anytime you cut your starting quarterback before or right after a team luncheon, you kind of throw the whole team for a little bit of a tailspin. So, yeah, I think if communication would have been better, if expectations of what they needed him to do right away would have been more laid out, I think Blaine Gabbert could have had a better career.
Yeah, and I don't know how good. I wrestle with this conversation sometimes. I'm like, I don't know if he was going to be a great quarterback. Like, I don't know if he would have lived up to where you want him to live up to. I just don't know if he would have been as bad as in our minds he was. I mean, he goes on to have a terrific backup career, plays in spot starts. He's fine. I mean, he's definitely a back career backup. But this guy had a skill set. The thing that I always, if you go back and look, and it kind of goes to our first conversation of production and guys that are playing, the thing about Gabbert, man, is he had not played a lot of football. Like, he hadn't even played a lot of football in high school and in college. It's a total different thing than, like, Trevor, where he's, like, had the reins forever. Gabbert was just kind of a raw talent guy. Mm-hmm. And on top of it, to your point, they threw him in a situation where you'd really... wasn't great to be in there. Should have sat, no doubt. Yeah. And then also the other stuff that was going on around it, just the football team. But I don't know. I do think he would have been better. I don't know how good. I have a hard time quantifying how good he would have been. Like, who would he have been? I'm not sure.
Yeah. I mean, there's really no way of knowing that. But I do think that, because once again, I mean, you saw it in practice. The guy had all the physical attributes to be a great quarterback. He had a strong arm. You know, that there was accuracy when he was confident in stepping up. It's just the fact of being a quarterback relies a lot on confidence. And that confidence was tested and unfortunately fell by the wayside when he was called upon when he wasn't ready. And once again, that's just it's a mismanagement. It's a lack of communication of what expectations were supposed to be. And unfortunately, I think his career suffered because of that.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting to see... It would be great to be able to calculate that. You can't. The only thing you can say is he stayed in the NFL for a long time, and obviously he had himself a pretty nice career and around some really good quarterbacks.
He's still playing.
And still going.
Yeah. So I mean, I think it says something right there because not every great quarterback can be a backup quarterback.
I mean,
this is the Blake Bortles effect, right? So I think it shows that Blaine Gabbert does have, you know, the capacity to take on new playbooks. He has the mind to be a quarterback. Once again, I just think it's a lack of the confidence that kind of got him out the gate that was really his downfall in his career.
Yeah, one last thing on Gabbert. You said it, the practice field. That seam pass, man, that I never really saw him throw in the NFL. But that seam pass on the practice field is one that's, like, etched in my mind. Like, he threw it a bunch of times. Like, people around here want Trevor to throw it down the middle more.
Mm-hmm.
Blaine Gabbert on the practice field in that time frame, he threw that steam pass down the middle, and it was on a rope. It was worth getting excited about. Really was.
I mean, without a doubt. Listen, I've watched Matthew Stafford in practice. I've watched Jay Cutler in practice. I've watched Alex Smith in practice, and like Blaine Gabbert. You know, when the lights weren't on, when it wasn't a game, it was practice. I mean, the dude had one of the best arms I've ever seen in person. And I remember, I've told the story before, but I remember because it was the lockout year. So we kind of were left to our own devices to go work out and train. And I forgot what high school we went to.
That probably didn't help either.
Well, no, it didn't help at all. But, it was like a 7-on-7 period, and the linemen are just kind of chilling on the sidelines watching. And I remember... I think I turned to pot roast Terrence Knighton when Gabbert had a long connection. I think it was on a post route. And me and pot roast caught at the same time. Like, we looked at each other. It was like, that looked different. You know, like that was, we haven't seen that before. And nothing against, DG. Cause I mean, Dave at the time too was playing at a pretty high level.
Yeah, he was,
and we're coming off of a year where we just missed out on going to the playoffs. So, but we both thought the same thing. It's like, damn, like this guy's arm just looks different, but the ball comes out of the hand differently. And we had high expectations for Blaine Gabbert. Unfortunately, just never reached those expectations.
I didn't even think about the lockout. I wonder how much that impacted too. Just the whole situational
stuff. Yeah, I'm sure it wasn't ideal.
It'll be interesting to go back and maybe talk to Blaine Gabbert someday. I mean, I don't feel like we've ever talked to him. He was just dismissed kind of quickly in Jacksonville, and that's the way it goes for those guys. But I don't think he was set up for success. Let's just say that. I think you could argue he's the worst one to be set up for in team history. Now, you go to Blake Bortles in 2014. Now, they were in a complete rebuild, man. They didn't have a lot cooking either. Yeah, they didn't even have the running game at that time, the way most other quarterbacks in franchise history really had the running game. Mm-hmm. Now you bring in young receivers. By name, they were actually going to be pretty good and perform well, but they were super young at the time. I mean, you got the Robinsons, the Lees. You end up having a Hearns, like a nice find. Mm-hmm. You had some people there, but the problem was they were all like right here at the time. They had not done anything in the league. So easy to say in hindsight what they ended up having. But he was another one that kind of got thrown in like, okay, it's go time.
Sure.
You know, it's like, I think it was fourth weekend. I want to say it was against like Indianapolis, if I'm not mistaken. Actually did okay, I thought, in that game when he first came in, if I remember right. But the Jags were in this complete strip it down, historically bad in 2013 rebuild. They go get the quarterback. They kind of reached, it looks like, compared to everybody else's charts mm-hmm. on Blake Bortles. And they say, all right, go carry this thing. Like, I think if they had put Trevor Lawrence in that spot, mm-hmm. that might have looked a little bit different, where the quarterback has a great skill set, can make guys around him a lot better.
Sure.
And Bortles, I mean, he wasn't that guy. Like, that's not how you looked at him coming out. We were curious more about Bortles than anything else.
Yeah, but I remember, because I was playing for the Bears at the time, and I think it was like the second or third preseason game. And we knew that we were going to see a lot of Blake Bortles, and it was his rookie year. And I distinctly remember it was a play-action pass, like a QB rollout, and he threw an absolute, like, rope to a receiver. And I remember our defensive line coach, Paul Pasquale, stopped the film and said, like, this kid will be special one day, and then kept it going.
Huh.
So, like, those seeds were kind of already planted in our mind, where it's like, Blake Bortles, like, and that was the biggest thing, is that when you get Blake Bortles in movement, he had, like, an arm like nobody else.
Yeah.
And, like, that's kind of, like, what the game plan, I mean, once again, like, it was preseason, so, like, it wasn't so intricate in terms of, here's how we stop the Jacksonville Jaguars and Blake Bortles, but I remember having the discussions of, hey, when this guy gets out in space, he starts moving around a little bit, get ready, because he can uncork some, and he's got accuracy like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah, you know, he is, and the guys, people don't like this, but he's an off-schedule guy. He was an athlete, kind of like a game, or kind of like a backyard guy.
I think you'd call him a gunslinger.
Yeah.
Like, kind of like, yeah. like a la Brett Favre. I mean, yeah. that's what we compared him to in Chicago when we were watching film.
Yeah, he had that kind of mentality, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The problem was when you try to just keep him here in the pocket, which everybody does to everyone, from Lamar Jackson to others, mm-hmm. when you do that, then the flaws come out, right? The longer delivery, the okay, I'm trying to think too much about my mechanics and other things. A lot of the things they actually said about Tebow. When he yeah. came out, right? That if he stays in the pocket, now, Tebow, where was he good? When he was kind of rolling out and making stuff happen, where all that stuff breaks down. Mm-hmm. Kind of like Minshew is a little bit like that. Now, Minshew's different in terms of his fundamentals and everything out. I think he's better than probably both guys that I just mentioned. But it's pocket versus the outside stuff. And we see the outside stuff, and you get enamored with that. But that's like, what, 10% of the time? 8% True. Of the time? Yeah, that's yeah, not, yeah. not 85% of the time. So I think... At the end of the day, I don't know if he was set up for success either, though, or as much as maybe he needed to be set up for success when it comes to Bortles. And you said something earlier that still baffles me. I understand maybe he doesn't throw the prettiest ball. He's not a great thrower of the football, people will say. Mm. How that dude is not a backup quarterback in the league. When I see some of these guys playing, by the time November and December rolls around, is beyond me. It is a mystery to me. I don't get it. I've asked him about it. I don't think he even gets it. It just doesn't add up to me that he is not a backup quarterback in the National Football League, given the amount of experience he's had, and also at the time, like, and now he's out, but
sure.
but his age, he's still just like 29 years old or something.
Well, I mean, you mentioned this, you know, earlier on the show. Does IQ come into play then?
Yeah, I don't. I think if you look at the backups, again, it's a tough one to label. Minshew, very good in that area, right? He's been through a lot of different offenses, so it makes sense,
yep.
right? I don't know where that adds up for a guy like Gabbert. Did he just learn it? Does he have an IQ? Is he high IQ? Does he know football, understand football, understand different playbooks? Where does like a guy like Henny, who resorted to that backup role? I don't know that. I'm not sure. I think it might play a role. I'm not telling you that. I don't think Blake's a dumb football player. I don't think he's got bad IQ. Does that add up to understanding different systems as you go along and being able to plug in? But even if you look at that, man, like, I mean, you can be a backup quarterback in the league in the same spot for like 10, 11, 12 years. So, I mean, if you get there and you know the offense within a year, you might know the offense for the rest of the time there.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say this, though, about the backup quarterback position. Sure, the locker room with a lot of them. You know, Chad Henne, Jordan Palmer sticks out to me a little bit. I always will say this about backup quarterbacks, at least the ones that I've been around who have had a lot of success. They always seem like they would be fantastic, like, coordinators
coaches,
or head coaches.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you get that vibe? Because I don't know Blake Bortles personally. I've never really had a conversation with Blake Bortles. Like, when you talk the game of football with Blake Bortles, if you ever talk to X's and O's, did you get the vibe that Blake Bortles would be a great high school coach when, or a college coach,
yeah,
or play caller?
Yeah, no, I don't. I get what you're saying. I don't think you think of him in that way. You're talking guys like Josh Dobbs, and now we have that, right? We have Ryan Fitzpatrick, the Harvard guy. Like,
sure, yeah.
you're not wrong. Like, the connotation is, hey, there's this guy that is going to who's a what's his name? McCown, right? He actually does coach.
Sure.
Right? Yep. Who's the other one? Dilfer, right?
Yeah, yeah.
He does coach.
And obviously Jordan Palmer, like I mentioned too, is like a QB guru now.
So you're not wrong in that. I do think, though, maybe there's something there. I think Blake knows ball. We've had conversations with him. We've had him on the show, and you can talk ball with Blake. But does he look at it from that angle where you want? I don't. Maybe not. Maybe not. I think we've asked other guys, like, hey, can they be a backup and settle the backup? That wasn't a problem for Blake.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have to throw a pretty ball in practice? Like, maybe that's part of it? Is he too inconsistent throwing the football, even in practice, when you got to get your reps in?
Yeah, I mean, because that's obviously a backup quarterback's job is you give him the looks then of the other team. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't think he knows. I've asked him the question on the show before. And he's just like, yeah, I don't fit what they're looking for.
Yeah.
I come back to this all the time, and I'll end on this part. The last 2 years in the National Football League, there have been like 70 quarterbacks that have played.
Okay.
This isn't just like, hey, can you go in and take a knee? This mm-hmm. isn't, hey, can you go, show us a scout team?
Mm-hmm.
This is, hey, can you, like, get us through the next three or four games or give us a chance here. Because quarterbacks have been going down in the league.
Of course.
I mean, I think it's in part why the Jags have beefed up their room a little bit to get a guy who's played like Mac Jones, and they think they upgraded there. I think some of this started with even the Nick Foles guys, right? And but we are seeing guys have to play. And I don't know, man. I think I now, as a if I was a GM or a coach, I want a guy who can play.
Sure.
Like, I feel good about throwing him out there that can play. I don't know if all that other stuff, that other stuff's going to be really bad for me not to be interested in the guy.
Yeah.
And I just never have computed that with the Bortles stuff. It just doesn't make sense to me that when I'm seeing some of these jokers play, the guy that, the Giants guy that family's owned a pizza shop off the street playing, and you're like, you could have Blake Bortles playing right now or this?
I mean, Bortles did have an opportunity in, with the Rams, right?
Yeah, he was like the third guy there because Wolford was kind of entrenched.
Sure.
And they liked him, and now Wolford's in Tampa.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, even and Johnny, who's from Bishop Kenny, by the way, local guy, is a great story that he's been able to hang in the league. But, I mean, Bortles has 10 times as much experience as a guy like Wolford. But Wolford, to me, does fit the quarterback mold very much. He does strike me as a guy that will be on McVay's staff someday.
Sure,
to
yeah.
your point,
yeah.
you know? Mm-hmm. So there is definitely an element there. I just don't know what percentage matters the most in a backup quarterback.
I mean, listen, I think 90%, 95% of the backup quarterbacks in the NFL, if you brought them in to start your whole season, you're not confident.
Well, that's true.
All right, so then you have to ask yourself, okay, well, yeah, the goal is to manage. The goal is to maybe get a win here or there, but you're not bringing these guys in to win an entire season, make a Super Bowl run. Nick Foles obviously falls in the minority here. But what I think you are doing is obviously you're trying to elevate the IQ of your quarterback room. You're trying to help out your starting quarterback in terms of if he has questions to bounce those questions off of. And you're also looking for a guy who has a good eye in terms of, hey, what are you seeing out there? What can we do better for our starting quarterback? So I think all those things need to be taken into account. And once again, this obviously leads more to being the cerebral approach as more of a physical approach of what you've accomplished on the field. And I think that's what, you know, in terms of a head coach looking at a backup quarterback, that's what they look for.
Yeah, and one last one on that. All you got to do is look down the road and Doug Peterson, right? Mm-hmm. Longtime backup.
Yep.
Ends up obviously in the coaching ranks. You know, yeah. So it's a valid point for sure. Let's take time out. We're at Best Bet Jacksonville here on Monument Road. Get the weekend started. Good to see this place is busy on a Friday, and everybody's rocking and rolling early. And come on out. Say hello. If you have a little lunch hour, you can always pick something up right here at Best Bet Jacksonville. And when we come back, we will talk a little bit more football. One thing to wrap this up. What about Trevor Lawrence? Is he in a good situation? Bad situation? What if it was 22 versus 21? How would you grade it? And how does that factor in? We'll talk a little bit about that. Still more to get to. Jonathan Papelbon scheduled to join us today. Talk a little Jacksonville Armada as well. And interesting story from the Olympics that we'll even get into as we head into the 2024 Summer Games. We'll be back. Brent and Austin show on the Action Sports Shacks 24-7 Network here on a Friday. And don't forget Action Sports Shacks Primetime, 10:30 on Fox 30, 11:30 on CBS 47. We'll have you covered all weekend long. Only stations in town and, heck, maybe in the country that do half-hour shows on Saturday and Sunday all year long. Join Marcel Robinson, Stuart Weber, Olivia Tassley, and the entire Action Sports Shacks team on the weekend with Action Sports Shacks Primetime.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.